There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome back, everybody, to another episode of Bubba and the Bloom, episode 72. Going to talk some recent news, just a little bit of that took place over the last 24 hours or so. Our weekly game, where, looks like I'll be paying for golf, looks like. And then we'll talk about what I call the best strike pitchers since the All-Star break. There's three strike categories that Ryan will obviously detail when we talk Bloom boards. But you can find me on Twitter at BDNTrick, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod, and my co-host, as always, on Twitter at RyanBHQ. Ryan Bloomfield, how we doing, my friend?
I'm doing great, but tonight this intro, Bubba, is not about me. This intro tonight is in celebration, in honor of your Tout Wars Daily championships. Since you won't say it, you're too humble. congratulations on taking down the kind of big industry title of the 2023 year. Tuesday night was the finals
and we were texting and it was pretty much sweat-free, which was glorious because I've done a lot of DFS in my life and not many times is it not stress-free, so that was a nice feeling basically.
Yeah, there was, and you had J-Rod who got scratched, yeah. Right, like as one of the last games,
and he got scratched like 10 minutes or 5 to 10 minutes before the game started. I caught it, thank God. Some other guys did not. I don't think it would have helped them because we would have both had him. Like, it wouldn't have mattered based on the difference in the win. But, it was definitely nice. I appreciate that. You buried that lead when we talked before the show, so I appreciate it.
Didn't bring it up pre-show, but had to surprise you with that one during the thing. And yes, to humbly brag the show, I put this out on the Twitter account.
That was good.
I won it in 2021. So we have Shelly Verstrate won it between us. We sandwiched her. But we've got two of the last three daily titles, so which is pretty good. But honestly, man, testament to all the DFS stuff that you do on multiple outlets all season long. So kudos.
I appreciate it. Yeah, no, it's fun. I got lucky because I got my ticket like in the second week of the year, and it's just kind of been an up and down, nothing crazy. And just between the league and just overall, I play DFS pretty much every day. And it's been a nice little heater over the last like week and a half. So it's the perfect time to run hot is what it comes down to. Because DFS can be a total roller coaster when you're playing. And so it's the right place, right time type situation to make it happen. But I'm trying to see this is back here. It is first one I picked. I do think it's funny or a great quote. And you said this fantasy baseball mindset commented on your tweet about from the Bubba Bloom Pod about us winning two of the last three. And he said, this is the place where good analysis meets good results. And you said, this should be our podcast slogan or something. I think he's onto something.
I got to update the graphics now. Damn it. But that is...
That was pretty good.
That is pretty good. And hopefully more to come. We've still got 5 weeks and with some potentially exciting adds to the hardware. But get the first one in.
Get the first one. Kind of nice little trophy case and everything. It could be a little fun one. We'll see. But I don't usually go out and brag about it. So thanks for bringing it up. I appreciate
it. You do get Tout Wars tradition. You get your menu item. So to put you on the spot, And for those that aren't aware, anyone who wins a Tout Wars title the previous year, there's a party in at Tout Wars the following March, and anyone who won one of the Tout Wars leagues gets to pick a menu item in their honor. So what are we thinking?
It'll be something stack related for DFS. Like a burger with like a few layers to it or something, like a stack. Like, so I gotta think about it.
Figured there'd be some beef involved.
Yeah, I'm gonna go back and look at the lineup. I thought about doing fish because the Mariners and all, that was my team stack, but I'll, you know, try to go that route. But I'll look into it a little more. It will be stack related to have a DFS twist to it, that's for sure.
All right, well, but five or six months to decide. But
I got to decide. The problem is I probably won't be there, so I hope someone takes a picture of the menu and sends it to me or something.
I know. Well, and that's when I won it, there was no Tout Wars in 2022, right, so there was no menu. It never got the chance, but yeah, someone will take a picture.
Yeah, for sure. I'll have someone steal me one and bring it home, so it'll be okay. But let's talk about we'll do the quickest FPAS thing. FPAS is in a few months. We're finalizing, they're finalizing the agenda. We're finalizing golf. Reminder, if you want to play golf with us, contact one of us. We'll keep that simple because you guys are probably sick of hearing that a million times. We're playing golf that Thursday, the 2nd of November. Tee time started at 11 o'clock. It's a great time. We'll be done in time to go to the welcome reception that evening in Scottsdale. Anything else to add to that?
No.
Pretty simple.
Just hit us up.
Okay, cool. Yep, just hit us up and let us know. I know you guys are probably like, get to the show. We're getting to the show now. Lots of news and notes over, like I said, the last 24 hours. Usually it's like trying to grind to find stuff because I don't want to give you all the boring just injury stuff. Waivers in the end of August. It was a wild one on Tuesday when all the news started breaking about the Angels placing 8 players on waivers and a couple other teams placing people on waivers. 72 hours. You knew Thursday was D-Day because they had to be, because that was the 72 hours. Plus, you had to be there by September 1st to be on the postseason roster. So here we are. It pretty much took place with two teams in Ohio, of all places. So that's a whole other discussion. There's people complaining about the system. How even Dan Heron tweeted out that I've played in enough fantasy football leagues where you can't do this.
So, absolutely, RK. That's the first thing I know you and Ben Tidd talked about it on Bench with Bubba earlier this week. But like, I got to have my two cents in here, man. Like, absolutely, RK. That's something like you figure out. What we're talking about is this waiver priority thing. You don't go to the back of the line once you get your first pick. You can just gobble up whoever the hell you want to. Like, that's something that would happen like in a fantasy league back in like 2005, and you just realize, oh, that's not right, and then you fix it.
And that gets immediately changed for 2006. Like, that would never have happened again type scenario.
But no, MLB, that was the craziest part of it all for me.
Yeah. Like, what the every update, same team. Like, what in the world? Like Craig Mish said, the Marlins had bids in on Giolito and all the relievers. They didn't get him because obviously Cleveland got them. And
the Diamondbacks had 4 bids in, didn't get anybody.
I don't even know what the Giants did. They had to have some bids in. Clevinger, I'll say this right out the gate, Clevinger did not get picked up because two things, the only thing I saw was they said he was still owed too much. Like Giolito was owed $1.2 million. Clevinger only had a couple million. So teams were like, I don't want him for a rental for like $2 million. I think there may be some other things going on because I thought as a Giants fan, I know that Kapler and the front office takes off the field stuff quite seriously. So I figured they wouldn't put a bid in on Clevinger just because they don't want to deal with it type scenario. But not all teams are that way, obviously. So I was surprised that didn't take place. So the fun stuff, the Guardians of all teams, the Guardians given 5 games out of first in the Central. Central's a disaster. Twins are always the Twins. They went and added Lucas Giolito. They added Matt Moore, who's a sneaky, actually decent reliever since he went there. And they added Ronaldo Lopez, who's been great. This obviously is a big boost to Cleveland. So what do you have on this from a fantasy standpoint? Because I'll just say it, and if you want to, you're more than welcome to. Like I said, I discussed it with Ben. The Angels are a disaster no matter what. They have like nothing to bring up of relevance. But if Ryan knows of a nugget, go for it. I thought there would be something. That's like on Tuesday. It's barren wasteland is what it comes down to. But what do you got for Cleveland?
Yeah, there's not much here just fantasy-wise because, like, I don't know. If you have Giolito, you're probably still rolling him out there. Although Giolito, like, with the Angels, with that short stint, wasn't very good. I mean, over Giolito's last 5 starts, he's missing a ton of bats, but, like, the walks haven't been there. 7.24 ERA, like a 5 expected ERA. It's pretty bad. This might boot, like, Cal Quantrill or Xavier Curry from the rotation, which I don't think is that much of an impact. And then, I mean, bullpen wise, there's not much there either. So like, because I mean, Emmanuel Class A is Emmanuel Class A. So there's not a whole lot fantasy wise, and they didn't change leagues. So even in like only leagues, you're not entering new guys into the pool. So I don't know. Not much on the Cleveland side. It is weird to see them flip from sellers to buyers, even though they're further out now than when they were at the trade deadline, but that's a whole other thing. On the Angel side, yeah, you kind of nailed it. There's nothing really to fill in. Maybe Trey Cabbage if you're desperate,
maybe.
But
yeah, Trey. Go get your Ringifos. It's well, I guess what it would do is it's going to lock in all these kind of questionable guys. They're going to play every day. Now, are they valuable? Probably not, but they're going to play every day. On the Cleveland side, like Quantrill's making the start on Friday. I think it's pretty much an audition. Like either figure it out or Curry's keeping the gig. Yeah. On the flip side, like you have Allen, you have Bybee. Williams is dealing with a knee injury, so it does leave fluidity. I thought maybe they go six man to keep the young arms a little fresh in case they do make the postseason. That could be something. They have not said any of these things yet, so these are all pure speculations. One thing you do know is Giolito's going to go pretty much every fifth day. That's what they got him for. The rest of it with these young guys, it's kind of up in the air. They are stretched out. That was one of the things we talked about months ago when these younger pitchers got called up. They all had like 130 innings last year, so the innings isn't a concern. It's more just the volume, longer season. It's kind of that kind of deal we've seen a lot of these young pitchers deal with. So keep an eye on that situation. The Cincinnati side of things, I mentioned the two Ohio teams did all the damage. They added Harrison Bader and they added Hunter Renfro. Now the Renfro one I like a lot for power. Bader is strictly a defensive guy that, you know, he can have his moments. I'm not gonna say he can't be offensive. He's just been a bad year for Harrison Bader. There's no sugarcoating that. But what this does, Ryan, is this turns a Cincinnati team that we liked a lot of players for. That outfield is a mega platoon now. So yep. How do you, like, Curlin tweeted out a great thing. I want to hear your two cents first before I even bring up any other parts.
No, I mean, it's like total platoon. You've got basically Will Benson, Nick Martini's been like DHing. You've got TJ Friedl as your lefty outfielders. And you've got like, I mean, this is like hockey. It's like a line change for when a lefty's on the mound with Senzel. You've got as a righty, you've got Fairchild, you've got Harrison Bader as a righty. So it's kind of just, and with rosters expanding, and this will be a familiar theme throughout this show, but with the rosters expanding to 28 teams or 28 players, sorry, starting Friday, you're going to see a lot of this. I think you're going to see a lot more platoon work. And I mean, from a baseball standpoint, it makes a ton of sense for the Reds. I'm worried. I have Will Benson, who has quietly been like really bad. I have him in labor. It's one of those guys where it's like, I always talk about, you have someone in your lineup, you kind of set and forget, and they're not as good as you think they are. Will Benson has entered that territory for me, hitting .235 with one homer and four steals. I think Will Benson's probably cuttable. Yep. Unless you get those dream weeks against, you know, at home against all righties or six righties
I was going to cut you off real quick with the Benson thing. Is I'm with you because I've had him everywhere too. And it's been, thank God, NFBC's got like the midweek changes. So I've been able to kind of play matchups with Benson. But like you're in labor, it's weekly. He's very, very, like I've been so close to cutting him in the 12 team with the multiple changes a week. I can't even imagine a weekly holding them right now. So sorry, as you were.
No, that's he will be on my cut list. My problem in labor is I've got $9 left and $1 minimum bid, so got to be selective. Okay. But
see, because tout you get $0 bids, labor's one. Okay, gotcha.
Yeah, but yeah, he's probably on the chopping block, Benson, and should be for your teams as well. So
I'm gonna go through.
What did Curlin say? What do we got?
Because I actually agree with pretty much all of this. Because and I'll give this is Curlin's jam. Playing time. I guess this is what he pays attention to. And he says flat out, if I had to guess the playing time breakdown for the Reds, TJ Friedl, this happened earlier in the year, he'll lose at bats for his left-handed pitching. He started to become a regular with all the injuries, but before all the injuries, he was losing at bats for his lefties. So he's back to a strong side platoon. That probably checks out.
Yeah.
Hunter Renfro, potential weak side platoon, could get some run at DH, first base, and outfield versus righties if needed. I think he's more like a 60-40 guy probably, but pretty close to platoon. We'll see. Will Benson loses plate appearances, especially coming off a rough August. He agrees completely. Harrison Bader, defense can be the difference in keeping him in as a full-time player versus platooning. His gut says full-time starter in center field. If they value defense, I agree. I'm not sure that's where they are, though. I think they, with as bad as their pitching is, I think they need all the offense they can find. So Bader's the wild card to me in this one. And then Nick Martini, the wild card. Been productive since starting. Benson could also eat in his playing time. So that Martini-Benson thing is the one to watch. Jake Fraley's coming off the IL any day. So that'll take plate appearances away from Benson and Martini. Also, I think once Fraley comes back, one of those guys already goes back to AAA. That's going to happen.
I think the martini's been drank and
yes, it's shaken. It's a dirty martini now. And then he says goodbye to playing time for Senzel and Stuart Fairchild. I agree with that 100%. Those are two righty bats. They're gone. So your lefties are there for now. That'll be the thing that tells us weekend will be they have four games at home against Chicago this weekend. So keep an eye on how that all plays out. But I think it's pretty close to the way that playing time shakes out. It just makes it difficult because even like we're talking about down the stretch here, we have five more weeks. We need to maximize playing time at bats. So like if Friedel becomes a strong side guy, there's a bunch of lefties that week. It's that makes things difficult. Yeah. Like it almost just
not playable.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So it really, really changes up like the locked in guys, like you mentioned with Benson and others that we had in Cincinnati for a couple months there and we flourished with them. Now it's kind of like, hey, where are we rolling with this situation? Gets much more dicey this year. I don't even know when Votto comes back, but that's a whole DH situation.
Yep. And I think Votto's coming back early September. So
that's what I'm thinking. That's another whole wrench. Because Encarnacion Strand has been DHing. Maybe Renfro and Votto just trade DH roles. Maybe that's what they do. But that's going to get even more interesting. So they're good real life baseball moves for fantasy. There's really no winners, I think, in this whole scenario that we discussed. In this deal,
the only losers are people like us trying to figure this stuff out. And I mean, this is September baseball. I mean, welcome to September. Yeah. Like,
wait till we have 40 man rosters. That would have been...
Oh yeah, I'm old enough to remember those days. But this is not. I mean, the Reds are probably messier than most, but this is not just unique to the Reds. The Reds have a lot of platoon guys like we just talked about, but there are other teams that are bringing up, as we will talk about, a boatload of prospects these next couple of days. And so it may not be a platoon thing, but it's more, I want to give this prospect 3 or 4 starts a week. And this regular is going to be benched 2 to 3 times a week. Like, it's just going to be very difficult. We talk about maximizing playing time all the time and it's important, but it's damn hard to do in September.
Yep. Damn hard to do. It's only going to get worse because we got some prospects that have been called up, Ryan. It's been so much fun. And there's your caveat, throwing it out now. Ryan and I are not prospect guys.
We just talked about fantasy baseball mindset in our slogan. The title for this show should be like, we are not prospect guys.
Yes, we are not.
But we'll do our best.
Yankees are calling up Jason Dominguez and Austin Wells. Dominguez, the Martian, can't even buy his own beers yet. Austin Wells, catcher. We saw both of them in the fall league last year, actually. Dominguez has really turned it on. He's only played 7 games in AAA, by the way. I know that much because when I talked about him the other night. But he's really picked it up over the last month or two, which is positive, and the Yankees have nothing to lose. Austin Wells, I thought he had better numbers until I looked at him. Not overwhelming, but I think it's more of a let's get some at-bats in the big situation. So how do you look at these two guys?
And I think with Wells, too, it's also just get him used to this staff. Get him to meet Gerrit Cole and work with Gerrit Cole and get used to that part of the transition to the major leagues. You mentioned the numbers for Wells not being that impressive. I don't think Wells is really all that fantasy relevant. I think Kyle Higashioka is going to still play quite a bit, and he's a pretty good power bat. So Wells, I don't think is much fantasy relevant. The Martian, Jason Dominguez, like I think out of any prospect we talk about tonight, I think he's going to be, at least in Fab, he's going to be the golden child, and I use that word literally, because he's going to play every day. He's probably the highest ranked prospect so far that we've seen. And the numbers at AAA have been, sorry, at AA, he's only got 37 plate appearances above AA, which is a whole, I mean, that's just the risk with rostering any of these guys the rest of the way. Numbers were okay, but Dominguez had recently, like over the past month or so, has really started to kind of tear it up, which led to that AAA promotion. This is not, I still highly doubt that Jason Dominguez is a season saver. Not many people have Fab left, but I mean, if you had to prioritize somebody, it would be Dominguez. But I certainly wouldn't pin my hopes on a 20-year-old with 37 plate appearances above double A to do a whole bunch over a month.
Yeah, and I will say this much, like a couple prospects. I always hate doing this because I know there's so many great prospect analysts, so I always forget them. But like the Welsh has him seventh in his recent update of fantasy prospects. James Anderson has him ninth. So you got two very respective fantasy like prospect guys that both like Jason Dominguez quite a bit. But it's like Ryan said, I'm always very skeptical of these guys because they're getting a fast track, and it's not always easy on a fast track. And that there's going to be some hiccups, I think. So I'm with you on that. I'll probably be sitting and watching most of these guys and getting other players this week on Fab. But it will be fun, and a lot of people will get them, and it's exciting. So enjoy it. Next up on this whirlwind of prospects, the Mets, they're calling up Ronnie Mauricio. They also are recalling Brett Beatty up as the rosters expand. Yeah, whatever. But Mauricio, this is your floor. You've been calling for this for a while, my friend.
It took too long, man. I thought this would be the trade deadline, like, or at least maybe not at the trade deadline,
the 45-day
salute or whatever deadline it is. I thought this would be it, and not September roster expansion. So numbers look pretty good for Mauricio at Triple A. I mean, and so the difference between like Mauricio and Dominguez probably has, well, Dominguez is 2 years younger, probably has a higher ceiling. Mauricio has over 1,000 plate appearances at Double A and Triple A over the last two seasons. Like, he's pretty well seasoned and he's pretty ready to go. A 2020 season already at Triple A Syracuse, sub 20% K rate. The K rate's really what I like to look at to see, you know, what's that cup of coffee going to look like. Does Mauricio play every day? I don't know. That's the only thing. It's like, I think this could very well be a part-timer despite all the talent and all the excitement. The Mets were very reluctant to call up Mauricio until now. And so I can see him being just kind of a part-timer, which doesn't help a whole lot when you have other options who are vets and who may play every day.
100% on that one. And we'll see how that one pans out. It'd be fun. He could be electric, but you never know what these teams will do. And one that I think is very much a part-time one, but I could be wrong, is the Cubs called up Alexander Canero, I should say. This was an interesting one because the Pete Crow Armstrong hype has been going through the roof. A lot of very smart people said he'd be the next guy up. They were grooming him to come up here. Even the Cubs hinted at, like, yeah, we could see him by the end of the year. He's not up. And I figured they'd do it to have him postseason eligible. But they're bringing Canero up. The numbers don't jump off the page. 9 homers, 2 steals. He was a big-time prospect at one time. I will say that. Like, he was a very good prospect.
On your Giants, I think.
On the Giants, yes. Yep. He had a couple nasty injuries over the last year. An ankle injury and a shoulder injury, like shattered stuff. Like, the fact he's back and playing the way he's playing is awesome to see. But it was kind of surprising. Like, you look at his numbers, like I said, nothing crazy. So, and the Cubs have a crowded outfield. A very crowded outfield. So I think this is strictly a depth thing. Get him some at bats. Maybe he finds something for the postseason. I don't know. And maybe it's because if they bring Pete Crow up, they want him full time. I don't know either. But what's your thoughts on Canero?
So I'm gonna like be crapping on every prospect from here on out. I just look at the playing time. Like, Talkman's a factor. Ian Happ's not going anywhere. Cody Bellinger is playing some outfield. You've got Morel playing a little bit. Like, there's just a lot of competition for outfield spots. So I don't see, especially given the jump that Canary is making here, like, it's I really don't think he's gonna play more than like 2 or 3 times a week. And like you mentioned the numbers, Bubba, it's kind of a weird path, and it might be injury related this season. Started in complex ball, then went to high A, then went to triple A from there. Yeah. So, like, in only 161 plate appearances at AAA, 8 homers, 30% K rate almost. There's, I don't know. You get the playing time, the combination of lack of playing time and what looks like, at least I will admit, I'm scouting the stat line. It's just nothing's popping out for me for this year.
Yeah, it's not a, you know, come get me thing. The playing time is the biggest thing. Like, you look at James Anderson's list, he's outside the top 200 in fantasy. So this one has surprised me. It surprised me to see the call up on this one with all the other things. The Cubs are like, they're rolling. They're playoff bound right now. Things are in. So just a bit of a surprise when I looked at that one. The Orioles are recalling Colton Cowser. Everyone was excited the first time he came up. Didn't do a whole lot. Went back to the minors. He's been down there since August 16th and didn't do a whole lot. Hitting 245, two homers, no steals. What scares me, striking out 34.5% of the time since he returned to the minors. And the thing is, he played a lot when the Orioles called him up before. He was playing nearly every day.
Originally, yeah.
Yep. Yeah, this does not get me excited.
Nope. And the Orioles are obviously, they are in it in the AL East. I think this is more like a depth piece, and like he's going to kind of chill with Jordan Westberg and play three times a week, something like that. So Cowser, yeah, like you said, Bubba, didn't do a whole lot when he came up, didn't do a lot since he came back down. Probably isn't going to do a whole lot in a part-time role this time around. So I probably wouldn't even bid on him on Cowser in redraft.
Here's two prospects, though, I am quite excited about. And one of them was already on the blocks, so he's wasn't added in a lot of leagues, though, as Willier Abreu of the Boston Red Sox. He's returning from paternity leave on Friday, so he'll be back in the lineup. And they said they pretty much want to play him nearly every day. And Sedane Raffella, I think that's how it's pronounced. Raffella got called up a few days ago as well. They want these two guys to play pretty much every day. Raffella came up when Pablo Lopez went on the IL. Drew Hamilton came up for Abreu. Abreu came up for Jaron Duran, who's out for the season. So there's playing time here. There's past the playing time. Abreu hit very well in his limited time before going on paternity list. Looked really solid in the outfield. And then Raffella in the minors, man, 302 average, 20 home runs and 36 stolen bases. Like, I'm excited about both these players. Like, these are the first two where I'm like, okay, there's playing time. There's production we've seen. I'm interested.
And they're probably going to be cheaper than your Dominguez and 100%. Your Mauricios, just because the name value isn't quite there. Raffella, the stolen base thing is a big, I mean, and everything is categories in September. Those 36 steals, he had 28 last year as well. But by far the most important thing, like you mentioned, is playing time. It does sound like these guys are going to get some run. The Duran injury certainly helps with Raffella. So I would be very interested in him as well. And yeah, Abreu looked very good. I know it was 19 plate appearances. The numbers in the minors weren't as great, but still had 16 steals, 26 homers, with decent K rate. So I agree. These two guys are, I don't think you're gonna have to pay very much. They're gonna be lower on bid lists on most free agent screens this weekend. So probably more of a good value player.
Yeah, Abreu would be a nice replacement for Will Benson. That'd be one to look at in some formats where you can make that work.
I'm updating my list as we speak.
The Royals are calling up Nick Lofton, third base outfield player, 15 homers, 7 steals in the minors. I don't even know where he plays right now on that team. Maybe in the outfield. Maybe they'll find room for him. But I know, like you said, we keep poo-pooing on these guys. He's ranked 359 by James Anderson. So I have pretty much no interest in Mr. Nick Lofton.
And he is not lofting the ball very much with a 50% ground ball rate in Complex League and a 45% ground ball rate in AAA. So you take the lower launch angle from Lofton and... in all seriousness, the numbers are bad. The pedigree's bad. And Kansas City, like, sneakily a pretty good offense lately. I don't know how much Lofton plays.
Yeah, I don't know. It's just maybe a fill-in here, fill-in there. But we shall see. The last one prospect that I have for now, there'll probably be more by the time this podcast comes out in the morning, Spencer Horwitz of the Toronto Blue Jays. He's in the minors, 337, 10 homers, 9 steals. He came up for a couple games and someone on the paternity list earlier this year, or bereavement list, one of the two. People are always pretty hyped on him, a little bit of power, a little bit of speed, but great batting average skills is what was, I remember the discussion before.
Yep.
I guess it just depends. Like, Brandon Belt gets hurt a lot. He's day-to-day right now. You know, Bo Bichette's got his deal. There might be avenues to it. I just don't know where yet, and that's the problem. So he might be like a streaming type guy. Like, so there's maybe a little more interest than other positions, but I'm still not like in love with it.
Yeah, and this is what, so like it can, so that kind of the Michael Brantley path to success where you make a bunch of contact, hit for a good batting average in a great lineup, like when Brantley was with Houston later in his career. Like, I think that can, that mix of ingredients can work. But this is an almost 26-year-old with I don't think any major league experience. And again, not to sound like a broken record, but Ernie Clement's been playing. Kevin Biggio is playing. Santiago Espinal is playing for the Blue Jays. Like, I just can't see Toronto giving a everyday gig to Spencer Horwitz, unless, like you said, Bubba, Belt gets hurt or the DH spot opens. But with 5 weeks, 4 weeks, whatever left in the season, you can't. There's not time to wait on an injury to happen.
100% with you there. Speaking of injuries, we've got a couple of them here. Yu Darvish, we know he's been down. He went to the IL with an elbow inflammation. Well, now they found out there's a bone spur in his right elbow. He has got a cortisone shot. They've shut him down for now. Their goal is to hopefully have him back this year, but they're not optimistic he'll pitch again this year. And they basically said if the Padres really fall out of it, they're not going to bring him back this year. Hate to break it to Padres fans, if you're listening, you're going to fall out of it. It's just the reality. Like, the Dodgers are so red hot. Like, these other teams in the wild card. Like, the Giants aren't going to the wild card either. Like, I'm a realist. Padres are pretty much donezo. They're losing 7-2 to the Giants right now. Like, you're done. But so Darvish pretty much, like, he's a cut this week.
I think so. And a pretty, like, pretty underwhelming. For as great as Yu Darvish was last year, sub one whip, a 3.10 ERA, and 195 innings of that, dude posted a 1.30 whip, 4.50 ERA. And I wonder, too, like, if this is the last quote-unquote data point we get of Yu Darvish, what does that ADP look like next year? I'm pretty sure he wasn't drafted in our draft last week in the first seven rounds. He's going to be 37 next season and hasn't thrown. He does have that 195, like I said, last year. But, like, God, that's going to be – it's going to be tough to click his name coming off elbow issues at his age. I know bone spurs, like, may not be as serious. You can get those things removed, but it scares me.
It is very scary. It just feels like he's going like that Charlie Morton path where all of a sudden he'll get healthy again and throw like 3 years of just gas again, but you never know.
The year I fade him.
Yeah, sure. You and me both. It'll happen because you and I have the similar philosophy on that scenario. But yeah, I'm with you. It'll be interesting to see. Someone will literally go, this is a value, and he'll get drafted, and then it'll be the make or break time. But for now, he's going to fall because I don't see him pitching again this season. And when your last, like you said, data point is an injury to your elbow and we don't see you again, that doesn't end well for like the 2024 conversation for draft season. So
I'm a big proponent of how did you end the season?
And yep. Yeah, makes sense.
That for Darvish.
Makes sense. Yeah, and Pedro Avila has taken his roster spot. Don't run to get Pedro. The Giants just took him to Pound Town today, so don't worry about it. You don't want to go there. You don't want to go to Pound Town with Nick Avila. The last thing we got here is Nick Lodolo. It's official now. We kind of already knew it, but the Reds finally set it, shut down for the rest of the season. So if for some reason you're still hanging on to Nick Lodolo, you can go bye-bye with Lodolo. All right, weekend matchup, Bloomfield, floor is yours. As it's not good in the Bubba's world.
No, it's fantastic. It's absolutely fantastic. The momentum.
Dallas Anderson didn't even play.
Your boy didn't even play. And usually it's like oh, he was hurt, because I remember I took Brian Anderson. He didn't play because he was hurt. It's like, nah, they just
sat him. He's been playing every day, raking, sat him. And then he started playing again this week.
Didn't play Elvis Andrews at all. Like, he just literally sat there for 3 days on the White Sox bench. Meanwhile, slamming Carlos Santana got 9 points for me, so I took you down there. And then David Peterson.
Dealt.
How about him? You actually had a good – your Cole Irvin call was pretty solid. It got you 7 points. But David Peterson doubled him up. I said with Peterson, it's all about – the walks, you know, the K's are going to be there if he can string it together. And Peterson did very well. And I think, I don't know, it's probably the best start Peterson will have all season. But if you need to stream and need to get strikeouts, David Peterson, I'm not sure what his roster rate is in 12 teamers. Actually have that still under 50%, 49%. Matchup dependent, pretty solid.
And he's very, very solid. It's crazy that he got 14 points. I knew he pitched well, but that's bonkers stuff there. Yeah, the Andrews thing, I just was blown away by that whole scenario. As he was playing, to just get completely shut off was a pretty impressive stuff there. That's White Sox doing White Sox things. That's what that comes down to.
19-17 on the season. Just got to get this out there. The 10 points left. Yep, I've won four in a row. So it was 17-15. Green fee is $90, Bubba, at first pitch. So
I have to win at least 60% of the next 5 weeks, and it's on. I feel confident in that. We'll see. What do you got for this week? Matchups wise, we got Coors Field in play. We got four in Great American Small Park. There's a lot of ways to look at this week.
Yeah, this weekend, the four games is huge, especially four at Great American Small Park, and especially given the pitchers that the Reds are throwing out there. So any Chicago Cubs.
Real quick. I have to bring this up. Did you see who the Cubs are throwing in one of the games of the doubleheader tomorrow?
There's no I in team, but there is one in Indeed, and that's the hiring platform that you need to build yours. When you're hiring, you need Indeed. Instead of spending hours on multiple job sites searching for candidates with the right skills, Indeed's a powerful hiring platform that can help you do it all. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring all in one place so easy because Indeed does the hard work for you. They show you the candidates whose resumes on Indeed fit your description immediately after you post so you can hire faster. Join more than 3 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. Start hiring now with a $75 sponsored job credit to upgrade your job post at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Offer good for a limited time. Claim your $75 credit now at Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. That's Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. And support the show by saying that you heard it on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire Sports. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
See who
I don't even know if it's updated on there yet.
S. Green,
Shane Green. Oh. I read this getting ready for the first pitch podcast.
Whoa.
The 37-year-old Shane Green is getting called up. Reliever converted starter has not pitched in the bigs in over a year. Is getting called up to pitch game two, I believe, with a doubleheader in Great American Small Park. If you could get your hands on any Reds hitters tomorrow, I highly advise it.
Has not started. I'm reading the RotoWire blurb. Yeah. Shane Green has not started a major league game since 2016. That's seven years ago.
He's been strictly in like the Tigers bullpen. We remember how that went. 37 years old.
This is beautiful.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's the same Shane Green. Remember? Yes. He was like
one of the top closers
for half a season in Detroit. Yeah, in 2018 he had 32 saves and a 5.12 ERA.
Yeah, I saw that earlier today. That's why I had to stop you for like, you got to see who they're pitching. It's wild.
That is unbelievable.
September baseball.
So maybe, well, no, I'll still probably cut Will Benson, but man, no, that's bad. And he's going up against Ben Lively. You've got Jordan Wicks against Ashcraft on Friday. So it's a doubleheader Friday. So that's why you're getting the four. But like Cincinnati's rolling Andrew Abbott, who's been really bad lately. Yep. Cincinnati's rolling out Brandon Williamson, who's been actually
hit and miss, yeah.
But I think that's the of any like streaming, that's the way to go this weekend. Not only just because of the extra game, but because of Shane Green, all people. Good God.
Yeah. Shane Green. Yeah, I think Toronto heads into Colorado. That's a fun
one. Yeah, we've got Coors, and not only Coors, but it's Coors pitching. It's Flexen, it's Ty Block, it's Austin Gomber. Like Gomber might get scratched.
Gomber's still dealing with his back injury. They said he's going to be a game time on Sunday to see how he feels.
Yeah. No offense, but that might be addition by subtraction.
Better. Yeah, hey, right.
I don't know. It's probably a bullpen game, so that could be just as ugly. The Rays at Cleveland. We talked about Cal Quantrill gets his audition Friday. Then Logan Allen, then Giolito. Like that's pretty juicy if any Rays are available. So I think those are the best ones out there. It's weird to think. I think we talked about this last show, maybe a couple weeks ago, with the Coors thing. Like one of the harder matchup ratings was the Rockies at home. Yep. They are at home, but it's against Toronto. It's against Hinjin Ryu, who's been great, not totally skill supported, but been great so far. You say Kikuchi and Kevin Gausman. It's not that automatic. Okay, nope. Rockies are at home. Let's do this. I'd stay away from that.
Yeah, no. Like on my DFS show, I recommended Morton as one of my top plays the other night. He threw six, shut up, like strike one run, like 8 Ks or something. You can, if you are a good pitcher, you can pitch in Coors right now. The Rockies lineup is that bad. They are atrocious. So definitely a spot to not just automatically play your Rockies these days. All right, we'll just skip to it because we have an awesome Bloom board to talk about. And you're going to keep kicking my butt and you picked the best pitcher on the slate. So who do you have this week, Ryan?
Yeah, this pick, when you saw it, was met with the middle finger emoji in our little chat. So I took your boy, Kyle Harrison, who I was a little surprised, man, is like 22, 27% rostered in 12 teamers, which just seems really low. But I get it this time of year. A lot of those squads aren't as active, but I thought this was just a no-brainer. I mean, you watched his last start against the Reds and just unbelievable. 11 strikeouts, 6 1/3. This was an easy call.
Yeah, I've watched both of his outings. I love what the kid's got. As long as he stops walking or doesn't walk guys, which he's not, we're good. Yeah, he's only picked up in one of my three OCs. I think a lot of it was just because of the innings thing people were wondering about. But he had two starts this week, and if they're not going to hold back gains. And we did it on Tuesday's show. I didn't even realize it. He's so far under last year's innings. Like, he could literally go 5-6 and without an issue and be still under last year's innings. So it made me start thinking of why they were being so cautious with him to start the season. It really blew me away, but that's another story for another day probably.
And the other thing with Harrison too, why he might be so – and I just heard a lot of, like, I don't know. We talked about this, but a lot of issues with the walk rate. But
which is not that
bad. A lot better lately. Like, a lot better lately.
Like, his last 4-6 starts in the minors weren't even that bad. People were, like, talking about his April numbers. I'm like, that's not who he is anymore. He's a young pitcher that's figuring things out. Like, now will he have a bad game? Probably. I guarantee you he will. He's a young pitcher. He's a young pitcher. But, like, what we're seeing now, this is what development of a top pitching prospect looks like. Like, this is what you're seeing. And it's kind of refreshing as a Giant. As bad as things have gone over the last couple of years with prospects and free agency, it's now I'm on my soapbox. It's nice to see this actually, like, quasi look good for now. So I'll take it. I am taking Reese Olson of the Detroit Tigers going up against the Chicago White Sox, a team that's striking out over 29% of the time versus lefties this past month. So that's pretty enticing, which doesn't matter because Reese Olson's a righty. But they also strike out like 27% against righties. I mentioned the lefty part because Eduardo Rodriguez pitches on Friday. So have fun with that one. But Reese Olson, I liked him off and on as a streamer throughout the season. He threw 4 1/3, one run against the Yankees with 10 Ks in his last time. The thing he does well is strike people out. They're still stretching him back out. Like, he was stretched out, then back to the bullpen, stretching him back out again. Might give up a few runs, but it's 10 Ks, 7 Ks, 3 Ks, 8 Ks. White Sox are in turmoil right now. So I'll take my chances with Reese Olson.
Yep, another one who we talk about this a lot, but if you're going to stream, at least get that foundation of strikeouts, and 7 Ks or more in 3 of his last 4 outings for Reese Olson. I think that's who I was going to pick, and then I realized, oh, I should really piss Bubba off and take Kyle Harrison instead.
Yeah, if you guys want to know why the middle finger emoji came up, it was because I get a message, I picked pitchers first, you're really going to enjoy this one.
Hey, man, luck of the draw, I just got pitchers this week.
Well, I think I have a good hitter, so who's your hitter first?
Another good hitter. I've got Jesus Sanchez, who gets – probably should have mentioned this as one of the easier matchups, but the Marlins get 3 Washington righties this weekend, and it's not just 3 righties. It's Jake Irvin, it's Trevor Williams, and it's Josiah Gray. So Jesus Sanchez is a platoon bat. You can only really use him in spots, but the power is prodigious, and he should play all 3 games against pretty bad Nats pitching. So that was a pretty easy call for me.
Yeah. An easier call for me was Davis Schneider of Toronto in Coors Field. Since coming back to playing regularly since the Bichette injury, hit safely in all 5 games, 3 doubles, 3 home runs, 19% walk rate. That plays very well in our game we're playing. And he destroys left-handed pitching. So he gets block on Saturday, hopefully gets Gomber on Sunday. Either way, I don't care. He's going to hit like between 3rd and 5th in the lineup right now. Just crushing baseballs in Coors Field. Just don't sit him all weekend, please. I'll take Davis Schneider. That's my guy for the week.
All right. If he plays every day.
Yeah, trust me, I'm scared. He should. He should, but so should Elvis Andrus.
You can't sit the stash.
No, you can't sit the stash. That is very, very true. But all right, let's get to the brass tacks of all this. Let's talk Bloom boards. We went longer than usual because we had a ton of news for once. But let's talk Bloom boards. This is a fun one. I'll give you the floor for 3 strikes kind of categories. What do you got?
All right, so this is what I refer to as the three types of strikes. And this is stuff that I look at all the time when I'm looking at pitchers, especially like recent performance, because it's on a per pitch basis. So your sample size gets large pretty quick. So if I'm looking at guys over the last month, or in this case, we're looking since the All-Star break, wanted to find some kind of second half surgers, we're using this. So the three types of strikes are strike percentage, which is a very good, it's basically just the number of strikes divided by number of pitches. It's very basic. It's the inverse, obviously, of ball percentage, which I use a lot. HQ has used for years to validate control. So it's a per pitch metric to validate a pitcher's walk rate. We've got the second type of strike. It's call plus swinging strike rate, immortalized by Alex Fast. Congratulations, by the way. And Nick Pollock over at Pitcher List. Alex is now working for MLB, which is a super cool opportunity for him. But he did the research on CSW. And that's, again, your called swinging strike rate. It's a very good indicator. What I use it for is an indicator for command. So we talk a lot about like strikeout minus walk rate. This is CSW is very tight with strikeout minus walk rate. And then the last type of strike is your swinging strike, your whiff, which we talk about all the time. We use it to validate strikeouts. So you kind of have these three different like layers of types of strikes. And what I did with this board is I took all the pitchers since the All-Star break, all the starters that are above average in all three, and threw their ERA next to it just to kind of see what the results look like, and sorted it by, I kind of scaled them all together and sorted it by the best to the, not the worst, but the kind of closest to average. So the board for our YouTube crowd, our visual audience is up on there, but I also tweeted it out ahead of the show. So bunch of names, a little hard to see on here because there are a lot of names, but that's the general gist of this thing.
It's an awesome board, and I kind of want to talk about all of them. We're not going to. We don't have that much time in the day. But, like, obviously, Spencer Strider's at top makes sense. And the fact he's got a 3.51 ERA might mean he's underachieving in this whole situation.
He absolutely is underachieving. That's what I'm saying. Third overall in our draft last week, and I think that is A-OK. Could go second with Ohtani injury.
Yeah, seeing Strider live on Friday night, it's just ridiculous. What he makes look easy.
That's right.
Makes it look very easy. That's all I'm going to say. It was the Giants, grain of salt. So let's start with the man, the myth, the legend, the most popular name on Twitter these days.
I know you're going
to
talk about.
Yeah, let's go to Cole Reagans.
There you go.
Because he's third on the list here. 1.73 ERA since the break. It's pretty good. 66% strike, 32.1% CSW, 15% swinging strike. He's pretty close to Strider in most of those categories, to be honest. Strider's better than him. I'm not going to be stupid in that regard. But Cole Reagans has been filthy. We've talked about it. Everyone's talked about him a ton. But not a bad trade for Aroldis Chapman, if you're keeping track at home. And since he joined the rotation, since the All-Star break, like you pointed out here, you want to even throw one last stat in here, the one we like so much. 27.3% K to walk on top of all of that. So I love Cole Reagans. I'm waiting for a bad start so everyone can throw pie in everyone's face. But what's your thoughts on him?
No, I mean, this just validates. And yes, Cole Reagans is number three on this list behind Strider and Tyler Glass now. Like that is very favorable company. It just validates what Cole Reagans has done in his transition, his transformation, really, as a starting pitcher on the Royals. What I'm like pissed about, and I'm gonna throw this back to you, Bubba, is I don't have any Cole Reagans on my team. In any of my teams, I looked at the first half, like he was a terrible reliever.
Yep, he's terrible. So sad he's making him sick. He made Ryan sick. That's how bad it was.
Crying over here. But I don't know. What'd you see? Like I don't know. What'd you see? Was it just one start that you were like, all right, this is legit?
It was a combination of things. It was the first start, just domination, looked like a brand new man. Second thing is I'm making moves in my leagues weekly for guys with strikeout upside. He had a huge strikeout upside, like massive strikeout upside, which he showcased in that game. And then thirdly, listening to people like Nick Pollock break him down. And what Reagans did in that start, like I will always admit they're smarter people than me, shocker. And I will listen to them. And Nick Pollock broke him down and said, you know, he's got five pitches he was utilizing, which he wasn't doing before. The fastball velo was way up. The pitch mix completely changed from when he was with Texas. Like so many factors that are things like you've talked about, Ryan, when you look at guys early in the season that are like kind of things that stand out as maybe it's a new guy. So that's where it got me to the point of like, okay, I'm taking a chance on him. If at worst, I'm going to get strikeouts and he might like not be a good ratio guy. Whatever. I'll play that game. But if he is good, I never thought he'd be this good. I'm not that freaking naive. But at the same time, it's just like he made such dramatic changes. And we've seen this time and time again with young pitchers going to different teams. All of a sudden, the mindset, the philosophy changes. I was willing to take a chance on it. It's worked out so far. I'm looking forward to the 2024 conversation because I won't be able to afford him. But for now, that's what I jumped on. More than anything was the strikeout upside, and it's panned out to be an amazing thing.
Yep, absolutely. And yeah, we've got months to talk about the 24, but that will be fascinating.
Yeah, it'll be crazy because I've seen some people's September rest of season rankings for pitchers, and Cole Reagans is a top 20 pitcher right now.
According to this, he should be top 10.
Yeah, he should be. And it's probably fair, but for next season, it's going to be a rough conversation. The next guy is Bailey Ober, Nick Pivetta. I don't really want to hash on them because Bailey is back in AAA. Pivetta's in and out of the starting rotation. What I do want to talk about is Tarik Skubal, though. 4.68 ERA, 69% swinging strike, 30.2% CSW, 12.9% 12.9% swinging strike, 66% strike rate is what it is. And the thing with Skubal, which is very interesting to me, is he's been unlucky. If you look at his xFIP and his other stats, what do you see when you look at him? Because I think there's going to be so much better production out of him, and it's just not clicking every time out yet.
I personally think it is mostly bad luck. You look at a hit rate of BABIP 330 and a strand rate of left on base rate in the low 60s. So what that means is more balls are falling in for hits, and when that's happening, there's guys on base and they're scoring. He's just not stranding as many guys as he should be, and that typically regresses back to league norm. So like, I know we gloss over Ober, but that's basically what happened with Bailey Ober. It's more of the homers, but similar thing with Skubal. I think in addition to all of this green on this Bloom board for Tarik Skubal, you've got a 53% ground ball rate, which is just fantastic. Everything I look at with Tarik Skubal, he's pitching like a top 25 pitcher right now and has a 4.68 ERA since the All-Star break. So that just screams buy to me. I mean, I know in most leagues right now, like not much you can do, but I'm really, really high on Tarik Skubal, especially this is all happening after he has come back from that injury. He didn't even debut until July 4th. So very, very impressed by what Tarik Skubal has done. If that ADP is anywhere reflective of his 4.68 ERA, probably won't be, but I'd jump all over him next year.
Yeah, this is a great chart for next season already. Just kind of looking at situations here. And I'm just going to mention names and gloss over. If guys you want to talk about, go for it. But like, he goes Scherzer, makes sense. He's been great with Texas. Paulo Lopez has been awesome. Luis Castillo's been solid all season. Then you got the Aaron Nola conversation. I feel like we've talked about that enough.
I already threw up in my mouth talking about my miss Cole Reagans. Let's not do it with
I didn't. With Nola. Well, maybe we'll get Don, the bullpen guru, on to talk about Aaron Nola. He loves him so much. But Bryce Miller is one that even when I talk about him for DFS, I have trouble kind of wrapping my head around him. And the reason why is I see this chart, basically. 3.88 ERA, 69% strike rate, 27.7% CSW, 13.3% swinging strike. That's all pretty darn elite stuff. When you look at Bryce Miller, especially when it's just since the All-Star break, I felt like he was more dominant early on when he first came up, and it's kind of been like a roller coaster ride since then. When you look at since the All-Star break, though, because it's like a 3.88 ERA, 4.54 xFIP. So what do you think of when you see Bryce Miller on this list?
This is tough, and I'm with Miller, like, and just looking beyond the numbers, he is extremely fastball heavy, 60% fastballs with Bryce Miller, and this has been making the rounds in Seattle, and I hear a lot of it just because I'm somewhat close by. Is there's this like predicament with Bryce Miller where he's a pretty good pitcher if he just leans into that fastball. But long term, he wants to develop these secondary pitches. It's just when he does that this season, he gets smoked. And so like, it's more just kind of what Bryce Miller wants to do right now. It's easy to say he could be as good or as bad as he wants to be, but it is kind of that. It's like, he's not growing as a pitcher, but just by throwing 60% fastballs, he needs to develop some secondaries. But when he does that, he kind of gets rocked because his secondaries are not there. So I don't know. That's a long way of saying, like, it's just he's a tough one, probably the toughest one for me to pin down on this list. You take these numbers, strike throwing machine with that, you know, 70% strike rate, but the CSW is basically league average, 27.7, and league average I think is like 27.5. So that's where, like, I think for Bryce Miller to take that next step, he needs to develop a consistent out pitch that is not his fastball.
Might need to get a little walk down the dugout and hang out with George Kirby for a little while. I think he could help him with that. Yep. I think that could be something to think about. Or go hang out with Luis Castillo and work on a changeup. I think you got two guys in that dugout that can give you a great secondary pitch.
I mean, there is, you're not joking. There is a thing to Seattle being like a pretty much a pitching factory. So
yep.
There's hope for it to happen, but
I think it will. But I'm glad you're kind of on the same page with me. Like, you look at it and you're just like he should be good, but the results should probably be worse. Like, it's just like, what are we doing here when it comes to Bryce Miller? He's a very tough one for me to judge.
Yep.
After Miller, you got Kyle Bradish, who's been amazing this season. Did you want to hit on him at all? It is not talked about a ton, and his numbers are just ridiculous this year.
Yeah, and I actually, like, I haven't been as high on Bradish as most, but yes, this second half surge, and the reason I haven't been as high as Bradish is, like, he really hasn't missed that many bats, and that started to tick up a little bit. I don't think he's as good as a 2.54 ERA. Like, I don't think we're looking at an ace, but it does look like with this recent surge, Kyle Bradish could be like a decent number two, number three, and the ballpark definitely helps a lot with in Baltimore.
Yep. Baltimore, it's a good one. Somehow I never heard that one. I think
mainstream.
I don't know how it probably is. I just live under a rock sometimes doing.
I can't take credit for that one.
I almost just did a whole Mitch McConnell on that one. So yeah, we'll leave that one alone. John Gray, the ERA is crazy, but he's been one that's kind of bounced back, but then he scuffles. Tanner Bibee's been amazing, absolutely amazing this season. Yep. Brady Singer has been better in the second half, but still kind of he's getting rocky again toward the last couple of outings. I want to hit on Bradish's teammate here, though, Grayson Rodriguez.
Yeah, me too. Glad he's not here.
2.83 ERA, 67% K or strike, 28.1% CSW, 13.1% swinging strike. Like, you can dig into whatever stat you want with what he's done in the second half. The velocity, I mentioned it on a recent, I don't remember what show it was. I was very invested in his last outing because I believe that was Tuesday night. And so I was watching the game tracker on my phone a lot. He was hitting 99 plus to 100 plus a lot. And it was like with control, it felt like. So what is it with Grayson, who definitely made some great improvements this last time to the minors and it's developed in the bigs?
We talked about this a little. We grazed on it, or at least I grazed on it last week, talking about picks that surprised us in our 2024 draft. And I mentioned Grayson Rodriguez in the fifth round. Rob DiPietro took him. Rob's a smart, smart dude. Yeah. And I kind of see why he's taking Grayson Rodriguez. Like, it feels aggressive, but it might not be. Like, no. So you mentioned, Bubba, the velocity. It is, so by month, the fastball velocity, Grayson Rodriguez, 96.2 in April, up to 97.3 in May. It was in the minors in June. Came back in July and August, over 98. And like you were saying, pumping 99, even 100 at times. So it's not just the recent surge in numbers, which looks great. It's the added context of this is all happening in Grayson Rodriguez's second stint in the majors this year. He had that send down. He came back up. And now he's doing this. There's that. It's not just an arbitrary endpoint. It's he's back up and this is what it is. And then you tack on the velocity increase. Anytime you have a pitcher who picks up 2 miles an hour on a fastball, actually doesn't even happen that often. That can back up the stats and make you look a lot better as well. There is some injury risk to bumping up your fastball 2 miles an hour as well. But, this all looks very good for Grayson Rodriguez. And this is the pitcher that people who drafted Rodriguez aggressively before the season, this is what they were expecting.
100%. It's been very, very impressive. And Baltimore's putting it together with Grayson and Bradish, and Kramer's been decent. Gibson's Gibson. Like, he has stretches where he's good, and then he blows up again. But they're slowly penciling it together there, and it's been fun to watch. in Baltimore. Yeah, Kenta Maeda, Zach Wheeler is just quietly doing it yet again. Let's talk Sandy for a second. Sandy Alcantara, who the first half, it was like someone took over his body and was bad, and maybe it was the shift change, because we kind of discussed that as a situation. He's never been a heavy strikeout guy. But since the All-Star break here, we're talking 3.32 ERA, 70% strike. That's pretty good. That's Sandy stuff. 27.3% CSW and a 12% swinging strike rate. Obviously, much, much better in the second half than he was in the first half. Because on the season, he still has a 4.23 ERA, a 3.96 XFIP. So the second half, market improvements. Have you seen anything that makes you think, okay, we can buy back in next season? Or, like, is this the guy he is? Is he kind of a combination of both? What are you seeing with Sandy?
Probably a combination of both. Like, even the second half, Sandy hasn't been what we saw.
His last couple starts have been bad. Yeah.
So, like, I don't know. I'm not fully back in yet. I'm trying to see where Sandy went in our. So he was in the fourth round, actually taken right the end of the fourth round. Steve Weimer. So take note of who picked him. Steve's a
smart guy,
smart dude. Steve Weimer took Sandy Alcantara at the end of the fourth, right before your Yuri Perez, Max Scherzer. I mean, I'll throw it back to you. But did you feel sniped on that, or was
Scherzer? Yeah, Sandy wasn't on my list. It was Yuri Scherzer. When Sandy went, I was happy.
Yeah, I think he's just going to go in that like giant group of non-Strider, Cole Gossman, Castillo starting pitchers.
That's fair.
And I don't know. I'll probably end up going with someone else. But like I mentioned this last week, there's a lot of injury risk in some of those guys that we were getting taken in the fourth round of last week's drafts. There's Freddie Peralta, Brandon Woodruff, Tyler Glasnow. With Sandy, like, for what it's worth, like, I mean, volume machine. So there is that. You don't have to try to scavenge the cesspool that is starting pitcher waiver wires, because he will be in there every fifth day.
Yeah, and you mentioned Freddie Peralta, so I have to say it. I'm not going to go over the stats I went through, but I wrote him up as part of the daily matchups for HQ on Friday, and I mentioned his run over like the last five or six starts. Please read that. What he has done right now is unconscious.
I'm surprised he's not on this list.
Yeah.
He must have just fallen short in one of the three or something.
That's some fun here, because what he's done over the last thing, it's five starts, has been insane. To think about the production, especially considering everyone thinks he's the third best pitcher in Milwaukee, because everyone's crazy. But
it's funny. I've got the list in front of me. So this is the problem with arbitrary filters here. So when I said anyone on this list has to be above average in all three,
he's playing Freddie Peralta
doesn't meet the strike percent. So he's at like 62%. So a little bit below average in terms of throwing strikes.
But the other ones, holy shnikey.
The other ones, holy hell. 32% CSW, 17% swinging strike. Freddie Peralta, when you mush these three things together and add them up, he's number four behind Strider, Glasnow, and Cole Reagans. So there he is.
Yeah, that's why when you mentioned him, I was like, okay, I know we've drooled about him every episode, it feels like, for the last few weeks, but he continues to. I'm really, really curious to see how Friday night in Philadelphia goes, because they are ridiculous right now. So that's
number five. Who didn't make this list?
Who?
Julio Urias. Didn't.
You know what's funny?
Didn't meet the whiff filter, but crushed strikes and CSW, which sounds right.
It's funny when that makes sense, because he's not getting the whiff, but he's getting called strikes. That's what he does so well. He's been an interesting one, because every time, like, I want to trust him, it looks kind of like he's not dominating, which makes sense with the swinging strikes and whatnot. But then you look at his end line every game. We talked about this in the preseason, Ryan. Like, he's just trust the end lines. This is what Julio does. So, yeah, that's interesting. He's fifth on the list. Very, very interesting. I want to hit on Yusei Kikuchi real quick, because this is another one of those 2.36 ERA since the break, 65% strike rate, 29.2 CSW, and 11.8% swinging strike. He's been really good. Even the XFIP 3.44, not horrible. Not walking a ton of guys. That's his biggest thing time and time again. So what's your thoughts on Kikuchi? Because we've talked about it before. I was all in last year. We know how that went. Don't have much this year. We know how that went. So, yeah.
Same boat with you, man. It sucks to be 1 year off. And next year, who knows? Maybe that walk rate comes back. But you're right. It's all been the walk rate. Nice to see Kikuchi on here. He is lower on the list, so that 65% strike is just above league average. Like all three of these are just kind of not barely above league average, but he's just been better than league average, which is fantastic given where Kikuchi has been and where he's been going in drafts. Is Kikuchi a sub 3 ERA pitcher? He's got a 2.36 ERA since the All-Star break. No way in hell. I think this still is more of like a 3.50, 3.75 ERA type guy. But when you throw that type of ratio with decent strikeouts, like, you've got a very good mid-rotation arm on a team that should give him some run support. So been a fantastic year. He's not this good, but I think Kikuchi has salvaged and figured out a formula for success for him.
No doubt about it. After Kikuchi, it's Sonny Gray, Lance Lynn, who got lit up like a Christmas tree against the Braves. Yes, again, I take those as grains of salt. I kind of like look past Braves starts these days. I don't care who you are.
I should do a Bloom board of Braves versus non-Braves splits and see.
Yeah. You always do that one, like if you took out the worst start of pitcher one.
Start, yeah.
Just take out the Braves starts, see what it comes out to. I guarantee there's a couple guys that are just like, yep. Yep. Like the Giants, Kyle Harrison was originally supposed to pitch Sunday versus the Braves. They moved him to Monday versus the Reds. The Giants did him a favor in that one because I was not looking forward to that Braves start. That's for darn sure. And then Framber Valdez. This was a listener mentioned something in a roundabout way. I guess I'll read the whole question before we talk about Framber, because it's Jekyll and Hyde right now with Framber Valdez when he pitches. But Will Harris at sandwich_pick says, there has to be some kind of explanation for why Framber will suddenly turn into a middle sinker throwing pumpkin during his starts. And it's very true. 5.08 ERA, 65% strike, 27.7 CSW, 11.6% swinging strike. You look at his starts, it's like decent versus Boston, had a no-no through seven versus Detroit, got pulled. A perfect game, actually, through seven. Or no, he had five walks. Blown up by Seattle. Miami got to him. Blown up by Baltimore. No-hitter against Cleveland. Blown up by Texas, blown up by Oakland, blown up. Literally, it's like three good starts and like seven blowups.
Yeah. And we tend to remember the blowups more than the good starts. That, speaking from personal experience, I'm not that worried about Framber. Like I mentioned last week, I got sniped on Framber at the 5-6 turn in last week's draft. I would have taken him there gladly. So in addition to the quality of strikes that we're seeing lately, which is better than league average, he's still got that, and I'll hammer this, you know, till the end of time, that ground ball rate almost at 60%. It's just such a cheat code. So yes, some blips for Framber, but I'm not that concerned. I don't see this going the way of Christian Javier. Again, could be wrong, but like I think this is just kind of a blip. Velocity is still there, has shown that he's still very effective in certain starts. And so, I don't know. I would just ride it out.
I'm with you there. And the last two are Merrill Kelly and Jomo Jordan Montgomery, who love him a lot. So anybody else that we didn't mention you'd like to discuss before we do a listener question?
No, I mean, we covered it pretty good. Grayson Rodriguez was the one that, like, out of anybody on this list is one who stuck out to me.
Yeah, he's there. I think even like Zach Wheeler, we've talked about him a lot, so that's why I didn't hit on him. But it just showcases how good he's been, and he's quietly does it. Like, not a guy that's heavily talked about anywhere. And then even like in the draft room, he just kind of hangs out where he's the boring guy that you could take as your SP1, and you never say never, but you're pretty much going to have a good starter every time, like, throughout the season. Kind of those boring guys are good. I appreciate the boring. So Wheeler is 100% that kind of dude. All right, we got one more listener question because we hit on the last one. Boom Zoom says, how come Lance Lynn is good again? Did the Dodgers fix him? He's an old dog, or did he just need to get out of the hellhole of a clubhouse in Chicago? I think there's a lot to be a part of all of that, and then just don't face the Braves.
Yeah, exactly.
They changed his pitch mix up for sure.
They did. They changed the pitch mix up. The Dodgers, Noah Syndergaard jokes aside, Dodgers, I do kind of have appeal to authority there. They know what they're doing. And, I mean, obviously this question came in before the Braves meltdown, but again, not super concerned. I think Lance Lynn, who shows up on this list, 65% strike, 27 CSW, and a 12% whiff, all very good quality of strikes since he has joined the Dodgers. So not going to be an ace or anything like that the rest of the way, but he'll get you Ks, get you wins on LA, and that's meaningful the rest of the way.
100% with you there. I just have a fun question for you before we wrap up. Would you start Jordan Wicks tomorrow in Great American Small Park?
I'd be very nervous. I would be very nervous. The debut was against Pittsburgh, right?
Yep.
It was a good one. 9 Ks.
Great one. 9 Ks over 5 innings, 1 run. I do know.
I do it in 15s. In 12s, I probably would wait and see.
Yeah, I'm going to pull it up so I give you the exact numbers for listeners again. I do know it's, if you ignore the Great Americans part, which is not a great thing to ignore, the Reds do struggle versus lefties over the last month, as I just pulled it up here.
This is why Bubba wins DFS contests here.
You try to find every little angle you can. Over the last month, 28.6% K rate versus lefties. That's what Jordan Wicks does. 223 average and a 162 ISO over the last month. Now, if we want to get even deeper, because we're a Great American Small Park, we'll do lefties at home over the last month. 24.6% K rate, 186 average, 116 ISO, even worse than Great American over the last month. So I don't know. I think it's if you can afford potential ratio problems, sure. I think it's a good start. But and I doubt Renfro is going to be in the lineup just yet.
So. Yeah, that's true. That's true. 54% rostered in 12s on the NFBC, 18% started. So,
yeah, it's a dicey one. It's going to be a make or breaker, but he's no Kyle Harrison. So you got that going for you.
He is not. Nor is Reese Olson.
Yeah, it should be fun because I think what that combo will come down to is who throws more innings. Because, like, the only thing I'm worried about with Harrison is all of a sudden, like, okay, he threw 6 1/3 last time with 91 pitches. Oh, let's just throw him like two to three innings this weekend. Like, that's the Giants' way. That's my only concern with that one. But I hope for me and for you, he goes at least 5 innings. Let's put it that way, because that means the Giants are doing well. Final thoughts as we wrap up another episode, and we're gonna head into September. September already.
Happy Labor Day. Enjoy the long weekend. Enjoy the baseball. We'll probably do a schedule episode next week.
Yep. I think that'd be a good call. I almost messaged you that today, and then I saw this Bloom board. I said, nope, this looks awesome. So we're going to go this direction. But, schedule, probably not a bad way to go about it coming up. We'll see how these prospects play out over the weekend. Pretty excited about that. And I'm more excited to see how much money gets spent on these prospects this weekend, as there's a lot of question marks to be had with all of them. But I hope everybody has a great weekend. As Ryan said, enjoy the holiday weekend. All kinds of college football. If you missed it, 11 games were on Thursday. It was glorious. Va Tech, as Ryan's representing. Who do they got this weekend?
They got in-state rival Old Dominion University at home on Saturday night, 8 p.m. Eastern. I'll be the only person in Oregon probably watching.
Wait, they get a night game against Old Dominion? What did Old Dominion do to deserve that?
It's going to be electric. Old Dominion beat them last year, so.
Enter Sandman coming out on the opening weekend against ODU. That'll be fun. That'll be a good one. Make sure to stack up some of that. But yeah, it'll be a fun one. Make sure you check out Ryan on Twitter at RyanBHQ, the podcast at Bubba Bloom Pod. I am at BD Intrick, and until next week, this was Bubba and the Bloom, episode 72. Catch you guys later.
Way to win up to 25 times your money this football season? Test your skills on Prize Picks, the most exciting way to play daily fantasy sports. Just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projection for a wide variety of statistics, and place your entry. It's as easy as that. If you have the skills, you can turn $10 into $250 with just a few taps. Easy gameplay, quick withdrawals, and an enormous selection of players and stat options are what make Prize Picks the number one daily fantasy sports app. Ready to test your skills? Join the Prize Picks community of more than 7 million football fans who have already signed up. Right now, Prize Picks will match your first deposit up to $100. Just visit prizepicks.com/get100. And use code GET100. That's code GET100 at prizepicks.com/get100 for a first deposit match up to $100. PrizePicks, daily fantasy sports made easy.